Not again. Cool. So up next we have Czeslaw Bruckner, who had a last minute title change. So I'm not sure. Not sure what it is yet.
Okay, so hi everybody. Let me start by thanking Alex Flaminia and Lucian for organizing this event. Initially, I was thinking to talk about entropic time and possibility of superposing entropic times, but then I thought this is one of the rare occasions where there are a lot of people from different communities. And then I thought maybe I can give kind of an overview talk about recent progress that we made in terms of quantum reference frames. There are many people who are now working there also at the Perimeter Institute. And I thought maybe that's an occasion to get interested people who are maybe not active in the field. And so I decided to talk about quantum reference frames. The title is For Space and Space Time. And I will actually address three papers, which the first two have been done together with our host, Flaminia and Esteban. And the last one is just Flaminia and myself. And so let me start with the outline of the talk. I will briefly recall what we mean and what the use of is a classical reference frames. And then I will move to the quantum reference frames and use quantum reference frames to introduce the notion of extended covariance of physical laws, which we applied only in a non-relativistic case. And then I will introduce specific quantum reference frames transformations and show this covariance of physical laws under the superposition of translations and boosts. And then I will take two showcases, so to say, in order to argue that the idea of quantum reference frames could be actually useful. It's not just conceptually clarifying things, but can be used to maybe close some of the open issues or address them. One is a definition of relativistic spin qubit, which has been a kind of a issue in the relativistic quantum information. And the last part is something which I talked actually 2 weeks ago, the possibility to introduce a quantum local inertial frame, which is a specific quantum reference frame for which one can address the possibility of formulating and testing Einstein's equivalence principle for non-classical spacetimes. And I will be more clear what I mean with this. And finally, I will conclude. Now, one of the really most beautiful ideas in theoretical physics is that the idea that the laws of physics have the same form, independently of the choice of the reference frames, and there is in different branches of physics, different symmetries. I will concentrate here on non-relativistic quantum physics, and I just remind you on translations. You see here two observers that both observe a particle, which is this kind of non-local wave packet red of red color, and then they both describe this as a free particle. That sense that the dynamical equations of motions have the same form, where the state of one with respect to another is translated by the generator of translator as a momentum and some fixed distance between two reference frames x zero. Similarly, we can show that the same equations of motions are also invariant under non-relativistic Galilean boosts. Of course, now the generator of the boosts looks differently, and the parameter with which we boost is the relative velocity between the two reference frames. Even more general transformation will be some time-dependent unitary between the two wave functions connected descriptions of Alice and Bob in respective reference frames. And this could be induced by some time-dependent distance between the reference frame in this simple one-dimensional case, which could be, for example, accelerated frame with one with respect to another. And since this unitary could be time dependent, the new Hamiltonian will be have also the not only the form with, where we transform the Hamiltonian, but also the time dependence of the unitary. Now, in general, we will get something which is not of the same functional form as the initial Hamiltonian. And we can then define the symmetry exactly in that cases when the new Hamiltonian in the new coordinates has the same functional dependence as the old Hamiltonian in all coordinates. And then we can ensure that indeed the form of the physical flows is the same. That is what we call symmetry. Now, the idea of the quantum reference frames builds up on a simple observation. Although it's usually in our theory, an abstract choice of coordinates, in practice, reference frames are physical systems. And here, for example, we can think about two reference frames, the one kind of a static, the other one on some moving platform. And if Alice is anything to say about the Bob, for example, about the particle, which I describe here, B, then she can say that the system B is 10 meters away from the tree, which is the origin of her reference frame. So obviously here, the tree is an object and ultimately should obey our physical laws and in particular quantum mechanical laws. So the idea of quantum reference frames is somewhat shown here in a cartoon way as the idea, as a possibility that Alice reference frame, which I describe as A, could be seen by another observer residing in his reference frame C, in general in quantum mechanical state. And these quantum mechanical states could be a superposition or it could be entangled with a object under observation and so on. Of course, I will, I pick up the way to even put the observers into superposition. They should be seen as a cartoon. In general, we don't require to have this macroscopic superposition, but it is useful, just like we do it in special theory relativity, talk about observers, because eventually each of them in their respective reference frame can perform some measurements, and it would be good to know what kind of states they have in front of them, which they can measure with their measurement devices. Now, the very particular picture that I've shown and was an idea of quantum reference frame was very much influenced, at least for me personally, by this paper in 2011 by Angelo and co-author. But of course, the quantum reference frame were introduced in many different contexts in the past. In 67, by Akhranov and Saskind, at least to my knowledge, the first mentioning of this idea, but then also in quantum information framework with a really beautiful Review of Modern Physics by Rob Speckens, Stephen Bartlett, and Terence Rudolph, for example. And obviously I'm not able to write all down important references in this respect. Now, having this picture in mind, we can ask ourselves whether there are physical laws which are covariant under this kind of a more general reference frames transformation in which we jump from one quantum mechanical system to another. So can we assign reference frames to quantum system? And can we then find some extended notion of symmetries under which we can believe the physical laws are invariant? And of course, how to formalize this idea? Now, in general, we usually assume a kind of a background when we describe our physics, not always, but at least in the non-relativistic quantum mechanics. And we associate this with kind of absolute state or absolute reference frame, where from some abstract origin, we define the coordinates of all particles. Now, what I will now introduce is a different picture. It's a relational approach where one of the particles will serve as the original reference frame. And I can jump then from one or the other particle and then look at this as kind of transformations between reference frames, in particular when they have quantum mechanical nature. So in general, I will distinguish between three subsystems. And there will be something which I would like to call old quantum reference frames. Then a system under consideration, which will be particle, and then a new quantum reference frames, And I will try to describe what I mean, roughly speaking, with jumping from the old to the new quantum reference frame. And what is very important, description of will be always given to external system to the reference frame. So when I'm residing in a C reference frame, I describe everything what is external to it, because the reference frame in which I reside is not really a degree of freedom. It doesn't move. It doesn't it has always a fixed position. And also you avoid in this way any self-referential statements. But once I jump from C to A, then C and B will be external to A. And so I will always have two systems that I describe either from one or to other system. And all description will be given in a relative quantities. And so now I excuse, of course, for all those that are familiar with the quantum reference frame, here's the most simple example of what I mean, this. And it's a superposition of translations. So imagine that we have from point of view of C, two systems, they are frozen in time. I don't consider any dynamics. And imagine that B quantum states will be, we want to describe this, how it looks like when I jump from the external, this C reference frame to A, which is very sharp localized, and it's on position alpha. Well, then we know how to describe this. We just shift the particle B. However, in the quantum reference frame, I have to assume also the possibility that A quantum system is non-local. It's distributed through all the wave packet. And what we assume then, that the right way to look at the B is to coherently average the wave function of A and then shift wherever A is, whatever position of A is, at alpha, we shift the particle B for this amount of alpha. And what you get then is basically, when you integrate this as an operator, where what was a parameter in the non-relativistic case, or sorry, in a classical reference frame case, is promoted now to an operator. However, this is not the end of the story, because we said that we want to jump from A, from C to A. So once I jump on A, I should not describe anymore A, and here I still have description of A, but I should describe B and C. And in order to have this one last step in the full quantum reference frame transformation, I need to introduce a parity swap operator, which just swaps the states of A and C. Of course, if I think from C that A has this state, then if I am on A, then C will have this same state, but so to say, oriented oppositely. And that's why I have X and minus X here. And so I arrive in this quantum reference frame transformation for superposition of translations frozen in time, which is simply whatever the state of A and B as seen from C is, I apply the transformation and I come to the state of B, C as seen from A. And here are, well, nice pictures that illustrate what I have just said. Here's on the left upper corner, the classical reference frame transformation, where I have a reference frame A very well localized, almost like a C. And when I jump from C to the A reference frame, it's only that orientation of C changes, like C becomes now a quantum state, although it was just a reference frame from itself. And B is more or less untouched. Now, an interesting case is maybe on the diagonal, the rest of the cases. Here we have a situation in which I start with the product states from the C point of view. So A is localized, the two possible positions, and B is fully delocalized. But now if I jump on A, it will be C, which will be as seen from A delocalized, and even more, it will be entangled with B, such that the left part is entangled with the right B, and and this part with a closer to B. So basically, what was a product state from the point of view of C will become entangled state from the point of view of A. Of course, we also change the systems at this change. And what you here see in the left-hand lower part is an opposite case, where we start with the entangled state between A and B, such that the distance between A and B is always the same, the relative distance is L, such that when we jump on A, the B will be always at this relative distance L, localized now, and C will be delocalized. And final example is just a continuous version of what I have just said, is EPR state, and I will just not go into detail of this description to save some time. Now I should say that this transformation that I mentioned the last slide was also recovered in a so-called perspective neutral approach by Augustine, Philip, Flamini, and Esteban. And there is a lot of, has been done in this perspective neutral approach, which is somewhat has some conceptual similarity with what I was will be talking today. And I think Philip's talk is on Thursday, and it will be interesting to see also from that perspective quantum reference frames. Now, I come back to the previous question, how we can extend the covariance of physical laws. We need to have a dynamical picture. So I have to introduce the Hamiltonians, which are again assigned only to systems that are external to a chosen quantum reference frame. So if I look from the C point of view, then I have a Schrödinger equation governing A and B, which is of that form. When I jump to the A by some transformation S, I will change the Hamiltonian into a new Hamiltonian. But the requirement now for the symmetry will be that this change the Hamiltonian has the same functional dependence as the old Hamiltonians as seen from C. So this is the change, sorry, this is the Hamiltonian seen from C, but I change that into Hamiltonians as seen from A, and I require that this functional dependence on individual mass, position, and momenta is the same. So although I change the subsystems, I still require that the Hamiltonian description of all external systems is the same, no matter whether I'm in old or the new reference frame. So it leaves the functional form as Hamiltonian invariant. With this definition of the extended covariance, one can easily show that superposition of translations or superposition of boots have this symmetry. And what I have here is superposition of translations. What I will do is I will not jump into the frozen time between A and C, but I will jump on A and translate B for the relative distance A had to be at time t equals zero. So imagine that A at time equals zero had a certain distance. And now I want to jump at time t exactly at the distance, relative distance that A had at the beginning. And for example, of course, we are not restricted to case. We can think about A being in a superposition of two positions at some t equals zero. Now the transformation, because it's not anymore frozen time, is slightly complicated. So what we need to go is we move A backwards in time with the Hamiltonian to time t equals zero. Then we do the usual translation condition by the position A that I introduced before. We make a parity swap, and then we move C forward in time t. And this combination of transformation actually leaves the Hamiltonian invariant. So if I had the Hamiltonian from the point of view C, which was the description of two free particles, both for the reference frame and the particle under observations, after this transformation, I would have the same functional form for the Hamiltonian as seen from A. And very similar thing actually happens as well if we have the superposition of boosts. So again, now I will jump on A and boost B for the relative velocity between A and C, I'm sorry, at time equal to zero, that's a wrong thing. And so I can think about some relative velocity, which is not well defined at t equals zero. So it's v1 plus v2 as seen from C point of view. And then the transformation has the same functional form as the previous one. It's slightly different, just in the middle term. The first term moves A really backwards again at time t equal to zero. And then we have a Galilean boost of particle B, which is conditioned on the velocity of A that was at t equal to zero. And then we have a parity swap, but this parity swap is somewhat different than the previous one, because now we are talking about relative velocities and not relative position. So we need to set the velocity of C to be the opposite of the velocity of A. So exactly this makes this change of momenta such that the velocities are the opposite one. And finally, we move C forwards in time to the time T. And so this is a general, what I picture here is a general framework for jumping for different symmetry transformations, moving backwards, applying conditional unitary or conditional transformation and B, swapping and then moving forwards. And again, the free Hamiltonian is symmetric on these generalized boosts under this condition. And that's what we have shown in, back in 2019 paper. Now, let me go now to something different. And what I want to describe is two showcases that can help us maybe acknowledge what for quantum reference frames can be interesting in solving kind of concrete problems. And I will introduce relativistic quantum reference frames, particular ones for the spins. And I'll start with some with citing a paper from 2002, which was by Asher Perez, Petra Scuder, and Daniel Turner, in which they say that, for example, I read the second sentence, the reduced density matrix for its spin is not covariant under Lorentz transformation. So what they have seen is that if you consider the spin 1/2 particle, and then you boost the system, and then you then look at the reduced density matrix only for the spin doesn't preserve coherence. And the reason for that is that under the boost, spin gets entangled with momenta. And once you trace out the momenta, what remains is not anymore coherent. And for a very long, people ask how we can actually define the qubit. Because the spin 1/2 particle is some kind of a prime example for the qubit in quantum information. And it will be nice to know where the quantum information that is maybe stored in the rest frame or for a low velocities in a spin is actually gone once we perform the boost. Now, how do we define the spin operationally in the rest frame, or let's say more precisely in the frames in which I have low velocities? Well, with the help of the Stern-Gerlach experiment, what we do, we entangle the spin with a position and we send it through non-homogeneous magnetic field and measure the spin along certain direction. And this is way how we can define operationally spin for very low velocities. Where we have a decoupling of the angular momentum and spin is given by Pauli matrices. Now, in special relativity, as already noticed by Perez and co-authors, we have a problem because if we now Lorentz boost the particle, what we can show is actually that we can somehow save the correlations still, if the Lorentz boost is the boost for a very particular momentum, by aligning the magnet correspondingly, independently on the momentum. So whenever we know what the momentum is, we can adapt the measurement apparatus such that we restore the coherence. And this is easily seen by the following: when we have a state of momentum spin the rest frame given with this, and then we boost, then we have a certain rotation of the spin given by this unitary representation. And if we know how it's rotated, we can adapt the measurement apparatus. However, the question arises is how to measure spin if the particle is not in a well-defined momenta. What if we have a superposition of momenta? Obviously, we cannot choose any of the fixed position of the magnet. And in a sense, we will lose the coherence of a qubit. And so in general, quantum system will be quantum state will be written with some superposition of Ohmic momenta states and correspondingly rotation of the spin. And now the idea is to use the relativistic quantum reference frames to define the rest frame. So that's the thing, that even if the particle has a non-well-defined velocity, we can jump on a particle and find the rest frame. And the rest frame situation is more simple. We solve the problem there and we move back. So we boost to the rest frame. We define spin in the rest frame with the help of Stern-Gerlach experiment, as we know, and then we move back to the laboratory frame. So here is in the pictures what I mean with this. So from the C point of view, we might have, let's say, just two sharp superpositions, two sharp amplitudes in the superposition. Maybe the A particle is moving with some velocity, a minus y v1 and minus v2. And correspondingly, the internal degrees of freedom, which I here describe as spin as A tilde, will move depending on external degree of freedom of the particle, the velocity of the particle, which I here describe as A. So we have now C, A tilde, and A notations. But now what we can do, we can jump on the rest frame of the particle, in which then from point of view of A, I have I describe the system A tilde, which is the spin, and the laboratory frame. Laboratory frame, the frame in which I wrote down this general quantum state. Now the spin in the rest frame will be fixed, and it will be just in, as in every rest frame, described as Stern-Gerlach magnet. So here is in more details what we can do.
It's been 25 minutes, so.
Okay, great. So what I want here, I start with a description of the rest frame of the particle. So what I have here is the spin and the laboratory. I don't have external degree of freedom of the particle because I'm standing on the particle. Now the lab from the point of view of the particle is now in the superposition of all possible momenta. And now I can make a Lorentz boost, which will boost dependent on the velocity of the laboratory relative to the particle. So what you here have, it's a unitary representation, which depends on the velocity of laboratory, and this will rotate the spin depending on the velocity of laboratory. And at the end, I have to make a swap between A and C. So if I apply this new transformation on something which is of that form, where the spin is well-defined and I have the well-defined velocity of the laboratory, then I will jump from A tilde C to the A tilde state. Now the spin will be rotated depending on the velocity of the laboratory, and the and the particle will just get the opposite velocity of what was the velocity of the laboratory. So this is how we act with this operator on a definite momenta, but of course it's a linear operator, and we also know how we will act on a superposition. And once we act on the superposition, we finally get what is the state in the laboratory frame. And it's in general entangled state between the external and internal degrees of freedom of the particle. So that's the way how we can, from the situation this is well-known, come into the situation that we didn't know in the first place. And now we know exactly how the state transforms and get entanglement between momentum and spin. Now, with this quantum reference transformation, we can now operationally identify a spin operator which gives the same results in the laboratory frame as in the rest frame. And it looks like that. This is in the rest frame, and then we move in the laboratory frame by acting with SL operation. And such an operator has a correct non-relativistic limit. It satisfies the SU2 algebra, and it gives the correct eigenvalues, the same eigenvalues as the spin operator in the rest frame. So in a sense, that's our suggestion to measure in the laboratory frame whenever you have a particle with general a superposition of momentum state. Now, one can even identify in the whole Hilbert space two large degenerative subspaces, which means that whatever the state of C is, and we take one fixed basis, for example, spin up along Z direction, all these states give partition of the total Hilbert space into subspaces that we can call 0 and 1 for a spin along certain direction. So effectively, we can treat the relativistic spin as a qubit with the help of quantum reference frames. And I should mention that this formalism was used, and I will not talk about that very recently. The paper has been published on defining the relativistic Bell test within quantum reference frames. And this is really a cartoon which gives the whole idea of the of this experiment. Here in the upper picture, we have two observers that measure the Bell correlations for a pair of spins for a low velocity, and they see a very large correlations, strong correlations. Now, if these two spins are relativistic spins, and if especially if they are not in a well-defined momentum, they are if the observers keep their measurement devices as they have, they will see only low correlations and maybe no violation of Bell inequalities. And it was an open question, what should they do in order to restore the non-locality in terms of a Bell non-locality? And the idea is actually that they should use quantum reference frames. They should move together with the particles and keep these Stern-Gerlach magnets. Well, in other ways, they have to take the rest frame of the particles. Now, I'm coming to maybe just 5 minutes at most to something which is a moral command, because I talked about that 2 weeks ago. And that's the idea that maybe quantum reference frames can also be helpful in a typical situation that we are seeing in some of the future, maybe experiments that will tackle spatial superposition of masses. So imagine that you have a single mass put in a superposition. Now, strictly speaking, we don't have a complete theory to describe such situation, even in low energy limit. And imagine that what we get with this superposition is just one mass at one position or A displaced. Now, one can think, can we treat this as some kind of superpositional spacetimes? And the question is justified because these two configurations are related to diffeomorphism, translation by A. But what in experiments we actually see is that not all laboratory is translated. So there is the rest of the equipment which is fixed there. And so the rest of the laboratory is not translated. So we have the situation in which maybe we have a creation of a space-time by a superposition of single mass, but where the rest of laboratory is fixed. Now, in such a situation, we may be able to say something. And this say something is meaning that I can associate to gravitational field in one or the other amplitudes, states that are mutually orthogonal just because I can distinguish them by their spatial position. And this kind of parameter regime is the one in which really the gravitational fields are produced by distinguishable mass distribution. And so they correspond to orthogonal quantum states. Each this mass will be described by the well-defined gravitational field just in GR. And I will also assume that the quantum superposition principle can hold for such gravitational fields. Of course, this is something to be tested. So this regime is valid whenever the distinguishability between the individual states is much larger than the quantum fluctuations of the individual states. So it's really far from the Planck scale. And I want to make a very clear disclaimer that this is not what is traditionally called the deep quantum gravity regime, but this is one that it's probably easier to access experimentally and will be relevant soon. And so what we proposed in this last paper is extension of the local inertial frames for quantum reference frames. Maybe Alex, you just tell me how much time do you have to see?
Well, you're into the question time now. So you have about seven minutes of question time in this.
7 minutes in question time. Okay, then I will just say what the result is. So you know that locally you can always choose a Minkowskian metric. You can always choose such a coordinate transformation to get a local Minkowski metric. And what we suggested in this paper is that even if you have this superposition of different gravitational field, you can choose the quantum reference frame of a particle that resides in this superposition of gravitational field such that the coordinate is locally flat, no matter where the particle is within one manifold, within one gravitational field, and also no matter where in this superposition, in which amplitude it is. I'm giving just the final result. So if you say, have something which maybe resides a particle P in a superposition of different gravitational fields, then from a point of view of the wall of the laboratory, you can jump on the particle and then the wall will look like in a superposition, but locally the field will be Minkowski and will factorize out, which gives me maybe the notion of the quantum Einstein equivalence principle, just like Meissner formulation of the quantum of the equivalence principle, but extended to quantum local inertial frame. So with this, I would like to make a summary. I'll lay down operational approach to quantum reference frames. I try to argue that superposition and entanglement are frame dependent notions. In non-relativistic quantum physics, we have some generalization of covariance law and symmetries. Quantum rest frame in this showcase help us to define the relativistic spin operator. And unfortunately, the time was not enough to go into details that one can even define also something which we call quantum local inertial frame and extend Einstein equivalence principle to quantum reference frames. And with this, I would like to thank you for your attention.
Let's thank Czeslaw. So we have time for maybe one or two quick questions before we move to the discussion. Brian has his hand up.
Yeah, thanks, Czeslaw. Really quite interesting talk. Just back from the very beginning, really, about your definition of a symmetry. So in the end, because you're only asking that the functional form of the Hamiltonian be preserved rather than the operator itself, it's sort of like having a class of operators, any one of which serve as the physical Hamiltonian. And it reminds me a little of the treatment of symmetry in gauge physics. And so I wonder if there is a connection between the framework you've just posed and how one describes symmetry in gauge physics. Thanks.
Do you hear me? Yes, I would not know. So you mean because there will be many solutions for the Hamiltonian, which will correspond to the the same gravitation, all the same physical situation?
Yeah, it looks like a typical situation where I'd have a constraint surface and a set of Hamiltonians that would,
Yes, I think this is something which, as Philip is raising a hand, I think they have developed relation to the gauge theories. We are working now along these lines, but I can't say anything right now.
So maybe Philip wants to quickly comment on that.
Hi, Czeslaw. I wanted to ask a question, but indeed. So maybe on the previous question, So on Wednesday, I will talk a little bit about that in the context of constraint quantization. But now the question to Czeslaw, thanks for the nice talk. That also prepares nicely the ground for mine. On the last part where you were talking about the flat coordinates in all of these different superpositions, could you comment a little more on this?
Yes, I can.
So because they are, you went quite quickly, but because I guess these coordinates are not, dynamical degrees of freedom per se. So that's why I'm wondering, what if I now throw a diffeomorphism on each of the space times in your superposition?
Yes, so that's what is also related to my first comment, that this, so what we are doing here are not really also when one consider only diffeomorphism, they are not full diffeomorphism because it's only in the restricted space time. So you see that this configuration can be distinguished by using the reference frame, external reference frame. So yeah. Even if they are looking at these two configurations being translated to each other, they are not full diffeomorphism because you don't translate the whole space-time. So they will mm-hmm. be distinguishable, for example, mm-hmm. by the position of the mass. And so depending on, so they are orthogonal states. So depending on this G, which I now have a quantum states, I can perform then different local transformation. So let me go here. So this is maybe the where I didn't say much about, but it's relevant. So what you see here is, let's say that we have these different Gs. They will be distinguishable with respect to the external reference frame R, I mean external okay. one, which yeah. I mm-hmm. from, which I can leave eventually, but mm-hmm. I call it now external. And now I can find such a local reference frame transformation that not only within each space-time I do what I do generally here in GR. So no matter where I am in the particle, I can make a reference frame transformation depending on where I am, where the particle is, and the particle will serve as a quantum reference frame. But also I can also depend on which manifolds I will. So here is local reference frames transformation that depends not only on the position of the particle, but also on index I, which counts which manifold where I am. Therefore, I can always conditional make different local quantum reference frames transformation that in the vicinity of the particle, no matter where the particle is, the metric is flat.
Okay, right. So you use basically the wall as an external reference frame relative to which
the wall as an external reference frame.
Yeah, no, actually, okay, makes sense. Actually, some of the things I will talk about on Wednesday maybe are slightly related to this in a gauge theory context. Okay, yeah, thanks very much.
So in a sense, they are not gauges, so to say, here, because they are distinguishable, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's fine, yeah, thanks.
Great, so maybe we can thank Czeslaw again and move to the discussion session. So if there's more questions, we can ask Czeslaw then, so.